Theodoric himself was an enormously gifted ruler. He carried on wide-ranging diplomatic relations in Western Europe with other Germanic kings. He managed to attain a considerable degree of peace and order in Italy. As far as we can tell, Italy was quite prosperous, really, during his reign. He didn't carry on sort of wars against the local Italian population. But Theodoric had, again, some strikes against him. He and his people were Arians. Now, this was particularly difficult to be in Italy, where obviously the Pope was, and to be representing the emperors. Now, the emperors in the East, as we've had occasion to see, may have tried from time to time to find a formula to reconcile Monophysites, but by this time the emperors were having nothing to do with Arianism, so this was dangerous for Theodoric. And then towards the last years of Theodoric's life, towards the last years of his reign, Italy was marked by a series of plots and schemes and seditions and treasons. And eventually, the Emperor Justinian, after Theodoric died, sent his armies to Italy. And they waged 20 years of war there, from 535 until 555. Brutal wars, devastating wars for Italy. Italy was won back, nominally, by the East Roman Empire, but was devastated in the process. Anyway, there go the Ostrogoths. For the Visigoths, the legacy of their defeat by the Franks in 507 at Vouillé, when they were driven over the Pyrenees, we mentioned that, you may just remember, in an earlier lecture on late antiquity, and then their attack along at least the Mediterranean coast by Justinian in the middle of the 6th century, their Arianism, they again were Arians, although they converted to Catholicism in the year 589 as a result of decisions made by a king and a church council, and their political disunity. So they're attacked, they're beaten by the Franks, they're attacked by the Romans, they are Arians, and they are politically disunited. In spite of all that, they persisted until 711, when finally Iberia was overrun by Berber tribesmen led by Arab commanders who entered in the great expansion of the Islamic Caliphate early in the 8th century. Now, the Visigothic state was, for all of that, one of considerable cultural achievements and considerable artistic achievements. It produced a number of writers and thinkers of some note. It was not devoid of interest. It was not devoid of success. But they never managed to overcome political disunity on the one hand and more powerful neighbors on the other, absent the Visigoths. The Lombards entered Italy in the winter of 568-69 in the wake of the Ostrogothic defeat. Now, there had actually been Lombard troops in the East Roman army that had fought against the Ostrogoths. And as a result, some of them may, in a way, have kind of scouted out the area and thought, well, this is a place that we can eventually take advantage of. And sure enough, they came in 568-9. The Byzantines never really accepted them. They couldn't do much about them. But they always regarded them as usurpers. They always regarded their position in Italy as irregular. The Lombards had some other strikes against them, however. They, like so many of their contemporaries, were also Arians. And they seem not actually to have converted to Catholicism in large numbers, at any rate, until the very end of the 7th century. The Lombards were a people of considerable gift in terms of law. Their legal culture was very high. But the popes opposed them, the Byzantines opposed them, and the popes in particular opposed Lombard attempts to unify the Italian peninsula. Quite regularly, or quite clearly, what the popes were concerned about is that if the Lombards were able to unify the Italian peninsula, then Rome would be either conquered or cut off. And in either case, the popes were not particularly happy with that situation. By the middle of the 8th century, the popes turned to the Franks, to the far north, invited them to come into Italy, invited them to deal with the Lombard problem. Charlemagne answered that, well, Charlemagne's father Pippin campaigned twice in Italy, attempted to put the Lombards back in their box, but the Lombards sort of rose again after Pippin's death. Pippin's son, Charlemagne, came to Italy in 773-774, defeated the last Lombard king, put him off his throne, and took the Lombard crown for himself, absent the Lombards. So the future was in a very real way left, by default, to the Anglo-Saxons and to the Franks. Now, when we mentioned very briefly the British Isles in our lectures on late antiquity. We said that the Romans had been pulling out of England between about 370 and about 410, pulling their troops out to deploy them elsewhere in the empire.